We're doing in Yaakov, and we left off last time in the middle of war. Yoav had advanced to the walls of the city and purposely endangered the lives of his soldiers so that Uriah the Hittite, Uriah the Chiti would be killed. And in fact, Uriah, together with many other people, were killed by the enemy. And then Yoav, the chief general, the son of King David's sister, Tsiruyah, Yoav, King David's nephew, Yoav pulls the forces back, and when they regroup, the forces draw their sword against Yoav, and they say, "You killed those people. You made a maneuver that was obviously suicidal. Who approaches the wall like that? There was no chance we'd win. What'd you do that for?" And they're rebelling against Yoav, and they draw their swords, and Yoav retreats, and he's not sure what to do, and he sees that there's momentum. The people are getting real upset at him because everyone who was there saw what happened. And at that point, Yoav makes a pivotal error, one of those great errors of Jewish history. He pulls out King David's letter and says, "David made me do it. David told me to do it." And the people look at the letter. He gives them a private letter that David had sent him. He makes available to the public. He protects himself. He ensures the unity of the forces, but now everyone's talking. David had Uriah killed. David had Uriah killed. Why? What happened? Why did David have Uriah killed? And the next thing we know, Bathsheba has a baby, and the baby becomes very ill. And David cries and prays for 7 days. He won't go to bed. He won't eat a normal meal. And the baby dies. The prophet Natan comes to David and tells him the famous story about a poor person. He has a family. He has one sheep. And that sheep they'd eat from, they'd drink from that sheep's milk. They'd use its wool to cover themselves. They'd go to sleep hugging that sheep. And then his neighbor, this wealthy guy, has a guest. He wants to feed the guest meat, and he doesn't want to take from his own meat. So he goes and takes that cherished sheep from his neighbor, from the pauper. He takes that cherished sheep, slaughters it, and serves it to his guest. And David says that person will pay 5 times for the sheep. 5 times or 4 times?
5 times.
5 times, right? And then Natan tells him, "Ata ha'ish, you're the man. You're the wealthy neighbor. I gave you so much. I gave you so many wives. I gave you so much wealth. I gave you all of King Saul's household. I gave you all of King Saul's women. I gave you so much. And what? You had to take poor Uriah's wife? So in heaven, really, at one point Uriah would have died and David should have married Bathsheba, because as we discussed in the beginning of class, their souls were really meant for one another. But technically on the ground, what did you do?" And David right away says, "I've sinned. I did terrible. I regret it. I have to do tshuva." Natan tells him that God will forgive you, but you're going to pay. You did it in private. Hashem will have your wives violated publicly. You will have evil from within your home. You will have blood spilled from within your home. And the as you said, to pay fivefold for what happened, you will pay fivefold for what happened. And that's what ends up happening. For the rest of David's life, from losing that baby to having his son Amnon rape his daughter Tamar, then having his son Avshalom murder his other son Amnon after raping the sister, and then Avshalom leads a rebellion against him, and then Adoniah ben Haggith leads a rebellion against him, David, the rest of David's life is, to a great extent, the great moments in his life, he is dealing with the punishment for what he just did. Did David sin or didn't he sin? Well, he's punished. Technically, she wasn't married. Technically, her husband died at war. Technically, everything's fine. It's more than technical, because David then marries Bathsheba. And Bathsheba says, What am I going to marry you for? You saw our first child died. I'm going to marry you. God isn't happy with what you and I are doing. What am I marrying you for? And David says, I promise you, Hashem approves it. And I promise you that even though what happened in the past I was punished for, the baby died, now it's okay for me to marry you. And I promise you that your son will be the next king. And he marries Bathsheba, and he has another son named Shlomo, and Hashem names that son Yedidya, friend of Hashem. So you look at that and say, Rabon Shalom, you're happy with this marriage? You should say to David, no way you should marry her after what you did. Ah, so the story is not so simple. Without our sage's commentary, the text itself begs the question, why does God call the baby from this matrimony Yedidya, friend of Hashem? We'll add one more point. Kid comes home. It's Friday afternoon. The table's set. The house is spick and span and clean. Challahs, warm challahs on the table. Candles are about to be lit. The candles are set. There's grape juice ready on the table. There are nice goblets on the table. The whole house is set and the aura of Shabbos is settling in. His mother's in the kitchen putting the last minute dishes on the plata, and he smells the aroma of Shabbos, chicken soup, gefilte fish, chulent. The house is filled with the aroma of Shabbos. And as he walks in, he goes across to his room. What he failed to notice is that his feet got all muddy while he was playing. And this beautiful, clean house now has a track of footsteps going from the front door to his bedroom. He reaches his bedroom, and he looks back, and he sees the trail of footsteps. His mother has just come out of the kitchen ready to light Shabbos candles, and she sees the trail of footsteps. So she looks down the trail of footsteps, and he looks up the trail of footsteps, and their eyes meet and lock. And he looks back at the footsteps, and she looks back at the footsteps, and he raises a finger. Or, in Israeli style, he does this. Just a second. He runs to the bathroom, grabs a mop, grabs a towel, quickly mops up the floor, and then he looks at his mom and says, sorry. And what does she say? It's okay. How many people walk across that step, walk across that floor, look back at their mother and say, sorry, and then stay in their room? How many people deal with the mess they've made and also say sorry? We're very good at saying sorry. Are we very good at dealing with our mess? Very convenient to say I'm sorry. But are we going to make amends? The strength of David is that David goes and mops up the floor. David doesn't just say I'm sorry. David realizes he's done something wrong and he's going to work very hard. David says at the end of his life, V'chatati negdi tamid. I have never let the thought of what I've done wrong leave my mind. Never, throughout my life. Everything I do, I'm thinking, oh boy, I got to fix that. Ah, so David teaches us the concept of tshuva. David teaches us what it means to fix what we've done wrong. No, David was not perfect. And with that introduction, remember we began with the fact that ultimately, David is the highlight. David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam, we say every time we sanctify the new moon. David is the father of the Messiah. He is the father of the Davidic dynasty. And Hashem repeatedly says, for the sake of David, the greatness of David is not that he didn't fall. The greatness of David is that he got back up. Great people fall. The Talmud says, "En memanim parnas ala tzibur." We don't appoint a leader for a congregation. Ela inken, unless kupa shel shratzim ma'achorav. He has a box filled with vermin behind him. You don't appoint a leader for the Jewish people unless they have a history that's disgusting. Has to be someone who can overcome a past. Now, obviously, this needs work, right? That doesn't mean the way it sounds literally. But nonetheless, it does mean that part of greatness and part of attaining greatness is the ability to fix what's wrong. Not just to say, oh, I was born into this. Look at me, I'm great. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. If you really want to be great, then you really got to fix what's wrong. It's not just about being great. Now we begin our Gemara.
Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonatan. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani said in the name of Rabbi Yonatan, Kol ha'omer David chatayno ela tohe, anyone who says that David sinned is none other than mistaken. Shenemar, as it says, Vayi David l'chol d'chav maskil v'ashem imo. It says David was successful in everything he did. God was with him. Could it be that he did what it seems like he did when you read the text? And God says, I'm with him, whatever he does. So then what does the verse mean? The prophet comes to him and says to him, why have you scorned the word of Hashem? To do evil. It says that in the prophet. What are you telling me he didn't sin? Says the Gemara, Shebikeshta la'asot velo asa. Shebikesh la'asot. He wanted to do something wrong. Because technically, when he went and did it, he had no way of knowing if she'd be divorced or not. And when Uriah came home, had he gone home, so then she would have been a married woman. He wanted to do something wrong. He said, Hashem tells him, you scorned the word of Hashem, scorned it to do that which is evil. But you didn't do that which was evil. Technically, he didn't. We're in the middle of the Gemara. We have more to discuss. And that, Bezrat Hashem, we will discuss after Rosh Hashanah. Right? We'll have class next time. Bezrat Hashem, in 2 weeks, Monday night. We'll come back to this. So what we've seen thus far, the story on the surface seems terrible. Beyond the surface, it's a different terrible. It's not the terrible technically a married woman. It's the terrible of, it's a very not nice thing. But David works very hard to fix what he's done wrong. It is wrong to do something which everyone hears about and says, that's disgusting. But it's not the wrong that you think when you read the story. You read the story and you think he was with a married woman. And our sages tell us, no, it's not what you think it was. That doesn't make it right. We're in the middle of the Gemara. We've started. I think we've covered enough that you guys can sleep tonight. We're not in the suspense we were in the end of last class. Chazal are addressing some of our concerns. And even before you saw this Gemara, you should have been bothered with the question, how does it add up? Because without the Gemara, you see an indication that David is still the chosen one in his lifetime and after his lifetime, till today. And that certainly indicates to us that he did something right. So it seems like he did something very, very wrong. Part of it was as wrong as we think, part of it was not, and then he had the strength to do tshuva. I would like to quote a Gemara. Let's see if I can find it. Yes, someone had their hand up. We'll get there. Yes, the Gemara will discuss that. Okay, let's see if I can find it. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Yochanan said in the name of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Lo David ra'ui lo to ma'aseh ve'lo Yisrael hu'i lo to ma'aseh. David doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit him to do that thing. Israel doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit them to do the transgression of the golden calf. Lo David ra'ui lo to ma'aseh doesn't fit David. D'chtiv ve'libi chalal bekirbi. David says, my heart's hollow. What he means is, I've taken full control of my desires. When he says my heart is hollow, he's saying, I have full control of my desires. Really? So then how'd you do that? How did that happen? El alama asu, I'm skipping a little bit. So then why did they do it? Lomar lecha, this was part of God's plan for the world. And this was so that we would know, shim chata yachid, umin mokalach tzal yachid. If someone transgressed privately, We tell them you're not the first. Other people have done it. And you know what? Look at the tshuva they did. So David's role over here is to encourage us. We read the story and we say, and he still came out ahead. He still came out on top. That means this is a shot in the arm to us about the capacity of tshuva. A person shouldn't think, hey, you know what I did? We once had a student here who walked me home after class and says to me, I could never do tshuva. I said, why not? He said, because I murdered someone. He didn't murder someone, but he decided he murdered someone. Someone he knew was going to have an abortion and he didn't stop her. So he decided he murdered someone. Okay, fine. He took it very hard. But you could do tshuva. You know, David has to live the rest of his life with the knowledge he caused Uriah to die. He caused soldiers to die. He caused the baby to die. He caused his son Amnon to die. He caused his daughter Tamar to be violated. He caused Avshalom to die. What a wait. How do you get up in the morning when you realize you did that? And you get up and you sing songs and you lead the Jewish people to have hope. And you compile the songs that will inspire the people forever. Yeah, that's what David teaches us. That when we do something wrong, we don't give up. I don't know if anyone can imagine here what it means for a parent to know they caused their children to die. I wish it upon none of us. We should never have to think of such a thing. But David had to live with that. The prophet told him it's going to happen. So yes, his children had free will, but he set up the stage for them. I'm not talking about his wives being violated. David teaches us what it means to do tshuva. That a person continues forward and builds and says, I can sing tomorrow's song. And yesterday's mistakes won't stop tomorrow's song.